Yes.
They're out of links.
Who's out of links?
Bose. They have no links.
Bose Barbecue in Laughlin, California. Yeah. Okay.
And not only that, but when we sat down and I hit the record button, I realized I have to use the men's bathroom.
Yeah. So I just have to talk by myself until you get back or something?
Well, that's the problem.
Don't you have pause anymore?
Well,
we used to have tape recorders. We could pause them.
Well, you could pause, but there's a new fad that's sort of happening in the, in the real-time audio podcasting community, which is no editing.
Okay.
And apparently you're cooler if you do not have to edit your podcast.
Okay.
If you have to edit, which we do tremendous amounts of, because I just simply do, I just edit the heck out of everything.
Okay.
I take out all the pauses and the mispronounced words and the...
Right. Well, you need a live audience. If you have a live audience, you wouldn't have to edit. Because that forces you to be more disciplined. And stuff.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I need practice.
Yeah.
Because I'll say things that I'll regret later and want to edit out. And if it were live, I'd probably be making mistakes all over the place.
But that'd be okay. All right.
Would it be?
Yeah.
Well, the Twitch show, the This Week in Tech with Leo Laporte, apparently, I think he edits things out as well, but also does a live show. Like he's on on film, on camera. During the production of the show. And so one of the interesting things is that when they make mistakes, people can watch those mistakes while they're happening.
Right. So, but he will edit them out later, though?
The audio podcast he will.
Okay. So do you need to pause now?
No. I'm going to go for as long as I can, and then I'm going to pause.
Okay. You're not going to pee on the recorder, are you?
No. I could let it build up, and then eventually, like, we'll get onto some interesting topic, and I'll just have to go. And
yeah.
I don't know.
Okay.
Should I wait? There's a live band,
by the way. Do you have a government injury by any chance? Because that could make you have to go earlier.
I may have one soon.
We know
soon.
Someone who has a government injury and has to go to the bathroom like every 5 seconds.
Is it 5 seconds?
Yeah. And then,
is that also the stately walking issue?
Yes.
Is it because of the government
injury? Government injury,
okay.
Yeah.
So there's a live band. We have no idea who it is. I filmed a little bit of it for the weekly video.
Okay.
Be
Which has nothing to do with the audio.
Well,
don't get confused.
Right. And in fact, the last show that we did, I posted a video of Mark and myself on the... What ship was that? Do you remember? That was the...
Yeah, I do remember, but I forget.
Okay, I forget too. I don't remember.
It's
so that
means
you don't remember.
It's
if you forgot, that means you don't remember.
It's in Alameda, California.
Right.
And it's not the Jeremiah O'Brien, because people keep asking me the name of that ship. And I keep thinking Jeremiah O'Brien, but it's not that. It's something else.
Okay.
Hornet.
Oh, was it the Hornet?
The Hornet. Or is that the one in New York?
Well, you found the Dead Reckoning.
Wait, is the Hornet the one in New York, or is that the one in Alameda?
I don't know.
No, the Hornet's the one in Alameda.
I don't know anything about ships.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the Hornet's the one in Alameda.
Hmm. Well, so you found the Dead Reckoning navigation system.
Right.
And
I knew how to explain it because I'd been on that tour before. I was just repeating what I'd seen on that tour. I was just repeating what I'd seen on that tour. Earlier, yeah. Because I'd been there 3 or 4 times before.
Huh. Okay.
So, yeah, it's definitely the Hornet, because the one in New York is called the Intrepid. The display, the one you can walk onto in New York is called the Intrepid.
Okay.
So, the Hornet.
20? 2 short rib meters?
Yes.
Oh.
If these are short ribs, are the other ones long ribs?
No, those are leaners and the other ones are juicy. That's the difference between long and short.
Okay.
Enjoy.
So, is this number 20? Ah, there's a 20 right there at the table, at the edge of the table, where it belongs. Okay, so the biggest story, just because it's free, and I love stories about things that are free, and whenever I send an email to people about things that are free, I always write it F-R-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E-E.
Right. Mark does that.
Yes. Starbucks, as of this week, has free Wi-Fi.
Well, yes, kind but of. There is
something... It's free. You have to do a little bit of paperwork first, but it's all free.
Yeah.
You have to have a Starbucks card.
Yes.
And that was either purchased or within the last 30 days, or you added money to it the last 30 days, or you bought something with it in the last 30 days.
Okay.
So it's not really a big deal. Just if you're going into Starbucks user Wi-Fi, you would surely buy something.
Uh-huh.
Just get a Starbucks card and buy it with that card,
okay,
and you'll be fine. And then you get 2 hours of free Wi-Fi per day, as long as you have a card that's up to date like that.
Okay.
But you do have to go to their website and build a Starbucks account and an AT&T Wi-Fi account, because Starbucks now uses the AT&T instead of T-Mobile.
Okay.
So You go to www.starbucks.com/card, which it says on the back of the card, and just basically register the card like it says, except at one point it'll ask you if you want Wi-Fi with that, and you say yes, and then you have to create an AT&T account as well as a Starbucks account.
What does that cost for the
AT&T? Nothing. It's totally free. But you just have to go through a little bit of paperwork to build these two separate accounts.
Okay.
And then as long as your Starbucks card has met the conditions of being used somehow in the last 30 days, then the AT&T side will know that and will let you on for the Wi-Fi.
Okay. So you do have to buy something with the card after you register?
Yes.
Okay.
No, you can... Buying a card is sufficient for that 30 days.
Okay.
I'm just biting ribs here. But...
Ow! Stop biting my ribs.
But after that 30 days, after you bought the card,
right,
you have to either add money to it or use it.
Okay.
But I'm saying, I'm assuming if you're walking to a Starbucks, you're going to use the card, so it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm. All right. No. Well, okay, but there's one catch
mm-hmm.
that I picked up on, and I did not know this until you actually were trying it, and that is, it is 2 hours consecutively, even if you're not using it
right.
for the day.
But they say they will fix that later. They are
thinking seriously
of letting you break up the 2 hours into multiple sessions.
Okay.
But right now, once you register, it'll turn off 2 hours later.
Okay.
And we're not sure whether you can switch to a different Starbucks in the meantime.
Okay.
You have to try that experiment. Now, I found some insight to someone I know who used to work for Starbucks for years. Gave me some insight about why Starbucks likes the cards. Besides the fact that it's
tracking.
A marketing, yeah, it's a tracking and all that.
Right.
But he said that the other thing is why customers like the card so much, that when you pay with cash, and you'll almost always have change, you feel guilty and you have to throw the change into the tip jar. But when people pay with the card, they don't tip at all. Because there's no way to tip with a card.
Right.
And people don't bother reaching in their pocket to get coins to pay a tip when they're paying with a card. And therefore the server just doesn't get a tip. And it's almost where people would normally leave tips from their change.
And that's why they don't like the card?
That's why the employees don't like the card.
Oh, I see. I thought you said that Starbucks doesn't like the card.
Sure. Well, Starbucks probably... I don't know if they even thought about that effect. But maybe people like the card partly for that tip effect.
Huh. Interesting.
Another thing that's free...
Free?
Free. You have lots of free things today.
I have something free, too.
Yeah. But you know, in bookstores, they always have that big rack with a whole bunch of different guides, 8.5 by 11, plastic-coated guides to all kinds of different software products.
Yeah.
Okay.
And how to use Excel.
Yeah, and it's a few dollars per guide or whatever.
Some can be expensive. Some I've seen about seven.
Really?
I think one was 17, was 14. For commands for JavaScript or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know what you're talking about.
There's a website, which I hope is... See, the way I take my notes, I kind of lose the URLs. But I believe it's customguide.com. CustomGuide.com.
Okay.
Has a whole bunch of PDF files that are basically the same thing. You know, they wrote it themselves. It's not really a copy of the ones in the bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like it's the same thing with the same quality, where it's just a PDF file you print out on a color printer, and you get a two-sided guide, and just laminate it yourself if you want to. Or whatever.
That can be very useful, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, you saw the list, and it had a whole bunch of different subjects.
Yeah, it was
a lot of Microsoft titles, Mac titles, Adobe.
So, did a community of people put this together, or was this?
No, I think they're a training. They're a company that does training, and they use this free stuff to advertise their training services, is my impression. What's your free? You said you have a free item?
Kudos.
You too.
But while he's doing that, one thing about our show, the URL we want to give out is long and complicated, or if we just forget what it is, we have a website where we post all the URLs that are talked about in the show, and that's whatsnewisold.blogspot.com. So for each episode of the podcast, there's a blog entry where you can listen to the podcast from there if you want, but also there's a list of the URLs in the show. Well, I have another freebie. There's a website I've talked about before, which is all free. It does one set of services, and now they have new services, and that's Jot, JOTT.com.
Okay.
You sign up for an account on the website, and then maybe you want to do things on the website from then on, maybe you don't, because you can kind of ignore the website after that.
Okay.
But they have a phone number you dial, and when in the United States, it's an 800 number, and they have other numbers in other countries. So you dial the phone number, and it recognizes your caller ID, because when you build the account on the website, you give it all the phone numbers you might ever call from. So your home number, your business number, your cell phone number, or whatever.
Okay.
So when it recognizes you and which account you are, it says, who do you want to jot? And then you can either give the name of a person that you predefined in its address book, or you can say the word myself, or you can say reminder. There's different things you can say there. And then you speak something, and an operator, a human operator, transcribes it, and either sends a note to yourself, or it sends a timed reminder to yourself, or it sends an email or an SMS to somebody else, and all that. So I mentioned that before, that this website has all those things, and it can be quite useful.
Okay.
But they have a new service now that works the opposite direction. It still says, who do you want to jot, even though that's no longer appropriate, because this is a totally different thing. And you say... What did you say?
You say the
jot, you say jot feeds.
Jot feeds?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then instead of you speaking a jot feed, like you would think in every other usage of jot, you say the name of an RSS feed that you have predefined on the website.
Okay.
And then it'll grab that RSS feed and start text-to-speech, start speaking it to you. So you can do news or weather or our show, although our show is just, the notes would mainly be URLs or something, so it wouldn't make much sense.
Right.
But anyway, you can...
It should play the actual audio file over the phone.
No, it won't do that.
That would be cool.
It just does text-to-speech of the text part of any blog.
How do you assign a word or whatever it is that you use to trigger it?
It has like about four different categories of words, and you just have to make sure you don't have duplicates on the different services.
Okay.
So a word could be the name of a person in your Jot address book, or it could be the name of a list. Like if you just want to keep adding to different lists. The point of it is that you're driving or you're just doing something where you can't type, because you really shouldn't type while you're driving, even though some people do.
Okay.
So some people
text while they're driving.
I know, definitely people do. I've seen people do that so many years ago when the Sidekicks first came out, stuff like that. People were doing that. But anyway, so you can build the names of lists, and then you can jot, say the name of the list, and it'll just add an item to the list. And you can go on the website and see your list and what contents are in them right now.
Okay.
Or you can say myself, or I think that's all for the classic ones. That might be the only words. I can't think of anything else. And then for the feeds, when you go to the website, you sign up for which RSS feeds you're interested in and what word you want to kick off each one.
Okay.
And just, again, avoiding any duplicates. Although, you know what?
Do you create it? Do you just type it in? Or how do you...
Yeah, just type it in.
So it must know the phonemes and...
Yeah, so it has to recognize it as though a computer were going to say it. You know, it's listening for you to say something in the same sort of way the computer might pronounce it.
Yeah. It's like, tell me.
Yeah, right.
Do you know the technology they're using? Is it Microsoft or...
No, I have no idea.
Okay.
Yeah, tell me it was bought by Microsoft.
Oh, did they?
It used to have nothing to do with Microsoft, but it was bought by Microsoft a year or two ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got to complain. The napkin dispenser is too crammed full of napkins, so when you go to pull it out, you rip the napkin out of
it. What exactly did you expect it to be full of, Wes?
I wanted to
expect mice to be in there?
I wanted it to be comfortably accessible. So that you enjoy the overall experience of the meal, not just the food.
Okay. I'm just busy eating. I've got to
look at that. I'm going to post it up on the show notes. Mm-hmm. But Billy, a 5-inch long elephant beetle that arrived in London via a banana shipment from Costa Rica, is desperate to hook up with a female before he kicks the bucket. So apparently these guys only live 4 months.
Right. Okay.
And the picture, the look at that, is the beetle resting on somebody's arm.
But is this in Gadget, or where did you get that from? Because in Gadget often puts their own pictures that have nothing to do with it.
No.
Okay.
Look at the size of that guy.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying that may not be the real one.
No, it is.
Because in Gadget, it's we'll just kind of come up with some fake picture that has nothing to do with the real one. And what does that have to do with the internet?
No, it's a look at that.
It has to do with phones?
No, it's just a look at that. It's just for people to look at and go. Maybe I'll just like do a direct link to the image.
Anything else? Computer related this time?
Phone
related?
Oh! That's right. That's what this show is.
That's right. I actually have a phone-related one. I forgot.
Do you?
Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to read this article. Philips introducing 52-inch 1080p 3D display. In our last show, we were talking a little bit about the idea of holographic images being displayed on monitors, or at least giving the impression that they were floating in virtual space in front of the user's face.
Right.
It's no nightmare. 3D is officially in style. Or it's succeeding in fooling us, one or the other. Further proof that taking things to the third dimension is all the rage. It's arrived courtesy of Philips, who has announced its intentions to reveal a 1080p 52-inch 3D display at Infocom later this month. The unit will utilize the same Wow VX technology showcased a year prior in its 20-inch display and will feature 700 CDM2 brightness, a 2,000:1 contrast ratio, and 8-millisecond response time. The auto stereoscopic display should be commercially available from Q4 2008 onwards, but we haven't a clue as to how costly it'll be when it eventually lands.
Does that one need glasses? Does that one need 3D goggles?
They don't say.
Because I saw an article this week, but this didn't seem that important. That was a new 3D one, but that did need the polarized goggles, just like the old movie theater ones.
It probably does, because they don't mention that it doesn't. But on that same note, there's another article that I have about a handheld PSP like device from Telson that does 3D gaming without goggles. And the article basically says that we've seen companies toss out kit that claims to showcase the third dimension without requiring a set of those face-consuming spectacles, but we're having an even harder time believing it would go over well on a roided up do-it-all handheld. Details are scarce on this one, but the Telson prototype reference model device looks to be hung somewhere between the land of gaming handhelds and unadulterated UMPCs. Within, you'll find a VIA C7M processor, 512 megs of RAM, a 30 to 60 gig hard drive, and a 4.3-inch 800x480 resolution panel that's reportedly capable of displaying 3D imagery without special glasses. Can't say we're huge fans of the design idea, etc., but we'll be keeping an eye out for this one just in case somehow it makes it into production. So it's...
Yeah, okay.
But I'll put a link up to this device just to show it off. The screen looks like somebody took an iPhone icons.
No, you know what it looks like? The whole device looks like my old, many years old Garmin GPS.
Really?
One of the first GPS I ever saw that could do a map. And
you had the city information on there.
Yeah, but it does not do routing, though.
Okay.
It's not smart enough to give it an address and have it calculate the route.
Okay.
But at least it shows you a real map, and it will show you what stores are near you and what restaurants are near you. It did all that stuff.
Right.
But it does not talk, and it does not calculate a route.
Right. Oh, it didn't calculate a route?
No. But, it doesn't talk either. The only thing it can do, it was called the Street Pilot.
Do you still have it?
I still have my original Street Pilot. Yeah, I don't use it really anymore. But I still have it. The one's called the Street Pilot now. I think they might still be using that trade name for some models. It'd be totally different.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's a black and white screen and all that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, what, I bet you got better battery life.
No, it wasn't that good. It took real batteries, but it wasn't that good.
Was it accurate?
Yeah, it doesn't do routing for what it did. Yeah.
Oh.
You know, and it had replaceable maps.
Okay.
I haven't checked lately. They might even have updates, because a couple of years ago I checked and I was still able to update the maps in it.
Huh.
But the only way you could do routing, just an example of how things used to be, we used to not have GPSs at all. But anyway, as an example, it will interface with some particular brand of software on a PC.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what brand, but it's some mapping software. And if you calculate a route on the PC, you can upload the route to my old Garmin Street Pilot. And it would then give you instructions on the screen.
Okay.
It would say turn left, turn right, but it would say it didn't talk.
Hmm. I remember the days when if the device you bought was firmware flashable,
mm-hmm.
generally what that meant was the company who sold that product would be continuing to update the firmware at a later date. So in other words, if your product could do that, it was worth it to you as a user to buy it, because chances are the company would support it. It was just sort of like an indication that, oh yeah, well their intention is to update this enough so that you can get the new features at a later date whenever those new features come about. It wasn't obvious that not every company was going to continue to support their own product.
Yes.
And I learned that the hard way. Some companies, Canon, who else? Let's see, Roku, another one I can think of is iRiver, continue to update the firmware for their old devices, and it gave them more credit. When you make your device flashable and you continue mm-hmm. to update it. Like they introduced Ogg Vorbis into their
Who, Roku did?
No, well, iRiver. Once upon a time it was really popular to have a CD player playback MP3 files, portable CD players.
Right.
Well, iRiver wanted to make the best one possible, so they made these solid, like metal MP3 players that had firmware, flashable, mm-hmm. and this goes back to like a while back, I don't know how many years. Anyway, they put enough memory inside to support more than just the OS that they were using, more than just those features, and a fairly decent DSP, enough so that when Ogg Vorbis, when the customer base started saying, hey, let's get some Ogg Vorbis, it's an open source technology and it sounds really good, they started a project where they investigated all their products going all the way back to the old days of any device that they had that was firmware flashable, including the smart media devices, not just the CD players, mm-hmm. just to answer the question of whether or not that device could support Ogg Vorbis. And then they posted that their results of their findings up on this site, on their site,
mm-hmm.
and my old device could in fact do it, just barely, but they did go ahead and flash that.
Oh, that's surprising.
So,
yeah, so most companies, they just don't want to spend the money developing for old products that
right.
they're not making any money on. As a matter of fact, they could lose money, because if they help you update your old product, you won't buy a new one.
Right.
And yes, they'll lose some sales for people who are pissed off that they couldn't get a new version, but I think they probably make more sales by people not being able to upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably why they do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, Roku is, and maybe iRiver was the same way, but I know Roku uses one sort of firmware that covers all their products. So whenever they flash, whenever they come out with updates, they do whatever they can to make sure that firmware fits in all of their devices.
Okay.
So they're really only modifying one code base, and I'm having to handle multiple different firmware versions for different products.
Oh, that's why they do, yeah, okay. Well, speaking of Roku, I mentioned before that Roku was the first company to come out with a Netflix media player, a Netflix movie player.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have a Netflix account, for months now, maybe years, I forget, they've had an option where you can play certain movies online,
mm-hmm.
and for free. Once you have the Netflix account, as an additional service, you can play all the movies you want of the set they have online.
Right.
Well, Roku has a player that hooks up to your TV set and also connects in the Ethernet or Wi-Fi,
mm-hmm.
and it can play the movies from your Netflix free account, you know, downloadable account.
Which is awesome.
Without having to have your PC hooked up to a TV set.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned this before, but thought it was vaporware. But they are shipping. I got mine yesterday and read the manual. Haven't really hooked it up yet. But a friend of mine did hook his up and says it does work perfectly, mm-hmm. exactly as advertised.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking at first that you would give it your user ID and password for Netflix, then would log into the Netflix website,
okay.
and let you browse through on the TV set, let you browse through all the movies you have a right to see.
Okay.
But it's not quite like that. When you set it up, the Roku player shows on your TV set its personal serial number. Then you go to Netflix on a PC and tell Netflix which Roku player serial number corresponds to your account.
Okay.
Okay, then on the PC, on the real Netflix website, you give a list of movies that you would like to play through the Roku player.
Okay.
Okay. Once you do that, the Roku's remote control then lets you go back and forth through that list, see all the movies you have in that list, and get information about them and decide which one you want to play right now.
Okay.
So.
But you haven't hooked it up yet?
No.
Wow.
But that's what the manual says, and my friend has hooked his up and says it does work. As
so,
advertised.
The advantage here is that they've got inventory. I mean, they've got movies galore.
Right.
Although not everything that they have is available for video playback, is it?
Right, yeah, exactly. No, most are not. But I'm just saying, if you have a Netflix account,
mm-hmm.
you'll find a tab in the account right now called Play Now or something. I forget what the tab is called. And anything you can play in that tab, which is, let's say, a lot of older movies or lower quality movies, or it mm-hmm. has a bunch of TV shows, things like that. But anything you can play on your web browser through Netflix, you can play on the standalone player in your TV set.
Now, is the quality, do you know what the quality's like?
The quality on the website is very good.
Okay.
Yeah, my friend says it's very good.
Okay.
That if it has any, the device has component video and HDMI outputs, as well as just regular video and Super
okay.
VHS.
Okay. And I've seen
so,
pictures of what the box
looks
like.
It should be, but it's tiny.
Yeah.
It's tiny, no control,
yeah,
no nothing. Yeah.
There's control. There's a remote.
Well, it has a remote, but there's nothing
oh,
on the box.
The
box itself is just
yeah.
tiny and nothing. So I'll have a report by next week of how it actually works, but it sounds
cool.
It's really good.
Cool. Yeah, and
that's,
it's only $100.
That's only $100.
Yes,
yeah. That's all.
That's incredible.
And yeah, there will be others. Supposedly Netflix isn't doing it exclusive with them. Netflix just has APIs that other people could write, you know, code to interface with Netflix's website.
I want to see, like, Microsoft secure a deal with their Xbox 360.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's the direction they're trying to go right now.
For movies.
You can rent movies and buy them, mm-hmm. much like Apple and their
right.
Apple TV.
Right.
But
you asked about the quality. Right now, see, I have my HDTV set hooked up to my computer as a second monitor in full 1920x1080 mode. And if I, you know, drag a web browser over to that window,
mm-hmm.
because when you have when you have something like that, Windows recognizes two different monitors.
Mm-hmm.
So if I drag a browser over to that monitor,
mm-hmm.
expand it to full screen, and run a Netflix on-demand movie right now.
Okay.
It looks really good. It looks like pretty
so
much
you didn't really need the box.
I didn't really need the box. It's just complicated. Just complicated the way I'm doing it.
Oh, okay.
Even for $100, I just get the ease of the connection to
okay.
the TV set.
Cool. That's cool. Yeah, I might see the with. I have an Apple TV and an Xbox 360. And I the problem with that is that as more and more devices come out with HDMI connections,
mm-hmm.
the need for a switcher grows.
I'll tell you one secret though, that DVI and HDMI are really the same thing, just a different plug format,
okay.
but they're really pretty much compatible.
Okay.
And you can buy cables that have a DVI at one end, HDMI at the other end,
okay.
so they can convert back and forth.
Oh, nice.
So if your TV has one or two spare DVI cables, you can use them as additional HDMI cables just by getting one of those converter things.
Huh. Well,
but I'm out of both of those. I have one HDMI and two DVI, and I'm all full of all of both of those.
Well, the other thing is that both of these devices, Apple TV and the Xbox, both use also Ethernet because
right.
they want to connect to my.
But that's not a problem. Just get a.
Well, No, I guess you could leave both of them connected to the router and just have them just continuously connected to the net, no matter whether there was an HDMI.
That's fine.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Never mind. I was actually kind of thinking about getting an HDMI switcher that had an Ethernet switch as well.
No, there's no.
I guess there is no reason for it.
No, but an Ethernet switch doesn't typically mean a switch.
Right.
An Ethernet switch is really a hub where all ports are all active and all the time.
Right.
It doesn't have a toggle or return which one's on and off or anything. Now, do you know what the difference is between an Ethernet switch and an Ethernet hub? Because they really do look identical, they both do the same job.
Yes, but one has more intelligence than the other.
Right.
That would be the switch.
Yes, because a hub is really like a Y connector. It essentially splits the signal. You can't really do it electrically. I mean, it does it with some electronics to isolate each of the ports from each other.
Okay.
But it just repeats the same data out of all the ports so that the different data going to the different ports will kind of collide with each other and slow things down.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the switch will look at which port the data is coming from, which port it's going to, and route directly and only to those two ports on the outside of the box.
So did you read the article about the research campus in Northern Virginia where scientists are reverse engineering the brain of a fruit fly?
Yeah, I did read that.
Okay.
Okay, let me just get free philosophical here.
So I'm a member, by the way, of the IEEE.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're able to read, could you read that article publicly?
No, it doesn't matter, like, legally. I mean, this is something that's already public. I didn't print this out from the members only part of their website.
But you could get more details?
I could probably get more details, yeah. Mm-hmm. Although they do even have different tiers of membership that allows you certain access.
Okay.
Yeah.
They just want money.
I know. Well, I joined them after going through an interesting process of being evaluated. I joined them for their software development project templates because they have a very rich set of IEEE standard documents that you can use. Computer companies and software development companies can use to sort of format the way they do their software development. So, and it was really good, but it was overkill.
I just hire a programmer in Russia or India and tell them to write your program. Why do you need all these standards and stuff?
Yeah, I know. No, you just do agile development, which means you sit in a room and you decide what it's going to do, and you go off and do it. And if you don't make it quite right, well, that's okay. You just did agile development.
You change the documentation.
Right. No, you don't. There's no documentation.
Okay.
It's a beautiful thing.
Oh,
agile.
Okay.
It's just 3x5 parts.
Okay.
Just sit around, and just say, oh, it's going to do this. I'll do this feature, and give me 2 weeks, and I'll do it, and I'll come back, and we'll do iterative development.
I can give you a big philosophy about that too. I have a lot of philosophical. But let me. Just,
I'm glad we don't have anybody to listen to this show because I'm sure that would have like sparked some kind of a flame war.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, but I'll ignore that for the moment.
Yes.
Talk about the fruit fly.
I want to talk about the fruit fly.
Okay. I claim it's just a theory. I may look like a fool someday, but
that's okay.
But I claim that our technology today cannot possibly understand living things because we're acting as though we understand everything on the science of it, and now it's just a matter of engineering and figuring out a bunch of engineering details how to do it.
Okay.
And I claim we're nowhere close, that there's going to be major scientific breakthroughs needed before you'll actually get to that point. So as they try to reverse engineer animals and stuff like that, they'll run into some hurdles that they'll claim are engineering, but they're really not. They'll turn out someday to be fundamental science.
Okay.
In the same way that, let's say, 100 years ago, people would try to understand the brain, or let's say 150 years ago, before people really understood electricity at all, before modern chemistry, before computer science, people thought that they could understand the brain. They thought, oh, it's just air blowing into different things, or it's just levers, it's just things on a miniature scale. We don't really understand it.
Right.
But if we study it enough, we could probably figure it out. We could probably build it, because we think we know how it works.
Okay.
But they weren't remotely close.
Right.
Because they had many levels of fundamental breakthroughs in the science and in the engineering.
Yeah.
To even get close.
Okay.
And I claim that we're not there yet, that there's still thousands of fundamental breakthroughs in science to go. I can't give you an example of them any more than the people a couple hundred years ago can give you an example of someday there will be electricity. or someday there will be chemistry or anything.
Right.
You know, it's just something we don't have a clue about.
Right.
But my guess is that they will run into dead ends trying to analyze living things.
Yeah, there's things that are left to discover that we don't know anything about yet. And as we
major as the ones in the past.
Yeah.
And not just little engineering details about how to do it.
Okay. That we'll find those things out when we start to go down this path.
Or we'll find out they can't do it.
Yeah.
So my challenge to them, what would prove it to me, is can they start totally with just non-living things and completely create a living thing without having a start from living things already?
Right.
If they could take totally ordinary materials and somehow turn them into completely living cells,
you have an interesting
then I'll believe it. Then I'll believe it. That's just an engineering problem.
By using existing things that as a foundation for making changes, we run the risk of not fully understanding what we're doing.
Exactly. Yeah.
And by that, and we might be trying to actually we might be trying to actually make it clear that we do fully understand it when we really don't.
And you'll know if by doing engineering only with science that we know,
right,
you can recreate it, that would be a pretty good clue that we do understand everything.
Right. But
if you're unable to recreate it, you're not quite sure why, and you think it's just more engineering, you may be totally wrong, and it's really fundamental science.
So doesn't that make us worse, though, if we are using things and combining them together? Not T cells. What's the most important thing that we're using?
Stem cells.
Yeah, stem cells.
Yeah.
So, but if we don't know enough,
stem cells are overblown.
But if we don't know enough and we put together these things, couldn't we be doing more damage than good if we don't fully understand them?
You mean, it suddenly makes a monster that.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily a monster, but introducing something that could kill people or.
Well, there's too many people anyway.
Oh, okay. So, Mark.
Yeah.
How dare you say that? What do you think?
No. There's way too many people in the world right now.
That's true.
If you don't find new sources of energy,
can we put limits on the reproductive on copulating? Can we put a copulation?
China does.
Do they?
Yes. Yeah, China for a very long time has had a limit of one child per family.
Well, I know Bulgaria pays you to have kids.
Really?
Yeah, because they.
Yeah. But China for a very long time has had this policy of one child per family. And people were saying, what happened with this big earthquake lately?
Uh-huh.
Where a lot of kids were killed in school buildings that were unsafe
and
stuff.
Yeah.
So there are articles about how China handles that, because they wouldn't normally become public, all these details.
Yeah.
But anyway, you can get a license to have another child if your child was killed.
As a child,
you can get a license to have another one. But yeah, they've had that policy for a very long time. Pretty successfully, yeah. And they'll force women to be sterilized if they violate it.
Yeah. So. That's interesting. You know what's funny is that ultimately it will lead to that at some point.
Right.
You know what I mean? It will lead to some sort of control over how many kids are born.
Yeah.
Like, well, our welfare system is we already, like, taxpayers have been complaining about that for years.
Yeah.
That's a totally different...
But see, it may happen by itself, though, because if we run out of oil and don't, in the meantime, come up with viable alternative sources of energy... then all of a sudden half the people on Earth will probably die because the only reason we're able to sustain this huge population we have is because of all this very cheap energy. You know. And no matter how high...
It's not cheap.
I know. It's still very cheap. It's still very cheap. At least it's still cheap enough that you can use it for all the things we do to grow enough food to feed all these billions of people.
Right. Okay.
You know. And yes, people survived hundreds of years ago. People were able to live just fine without any oil, without any energy like that. But the population was tiny in comparison.
Yeah.
And it's that energy that lets us have this population. So.
Words of wisdom from Mark Brené.
Yes. The world famous. Did we ever introduce ourselves at the beginning of the show?
I don't think so.
I'm Mark Brené, he's West. Okay. Anyway,
we didn't do the What's WNO? We don't really do the...
Yeah.
Welcome to the WNO show, where me and Mark sit around the dinner table talking about technology and wishing we could think about old technology and relate it to the theme of the show.
Yes, if we can. Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Can we get another round of ribs?
I don't like it that much.
No?
It's not as good as
Everett Lee Jones?
No, it's not as good as what we always get, the Dorado. Links. Hot links.
Right, yeah.
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 But they do use real bar, real... wood here.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I saw the guy in the backyard. Maybe it's just totally phony, because I have seen places that have big piles of wood around that's totally phony. But a guy was sitting there chopping wood with an axe out in the backyard of the restaurant when we walked
That was
here.
Impressive.
So,
yeah. No, and it was totally by mistake. We just came in through the back door.
Yeah.
And we heard this cracking. The guy was back there chopping wood.
Right. He was just exercising. He probably just throws it away. He's just doing it for, or maybe he's doing it for his fireplace at home.
It's the owner's. Yeah, he breaks it up for the
back. Just to take it home for his first fireplace. Although it's getting warm enough now, he probably wouldn't want to use the fireplace so much.
Okay. So literally, so we can't.
Maybe they really do.
They really do.
Maybe they do it here, yeah.
Okay.
Hal Burnett would be skeptical.
Well, he would be, but the kitchen is open, by the way, so you can anybody can walk in there if they want to.
Okay. Yeah, he might.
Could.
He might. Yeah. So anyway, so I have one that we can compare with old stuff. See, in the old days, you had this sheet of paper with printing on it of the different days of a month, with little boxes where you had room to write things in.
And if you want a calendar?
Yeah, if you want to schedule something, you'd look at your calendar and you'd write things in. And if multiple people wanted to set up a meeting together, they could all walk over to the same calendar and just look when they had available and write it in.
Oh, it's a shared calendar.
Yeah. But anyway,
I've known companies to have like a whiteboard that was huge and that was a calendar.
Okay.
And then people could go up and actually mark that calendar.
So they wouldn't have their own personal calendar.
No.
They would try to use that.
It was a community-based whiteboard calendar.
Oh, interesting.
And everybody, and it was big enough to handle lots of different things. I mean, it was huge. And everybody could walk up and do whatever they wanted to. But then the greatest thing of all is once a week, the secretary would publish an electronic version of that calendar as it was current on that Friday.
But she would type it in? They wouldn't just show a picture. They would type it in.
Yeah, they would literally type it in so it was all text, and you could cut, copy, paste, and things like that.
Okay. But anyway, what I've had for years, I've been using a Microsoft Exchange server for years, not for any good reason, because it's just really me. But I like to pretend that I'm in a giant corporation and have this, all the software is always in a big corporation with thousands of people.
Yeah,
just to play. So I've been using the Exchange server for years. An Exchange server has a multiple-person calendaring capability.
Right.
Whereas, assuming everyone uses the Exchange server for their personal calendar, which one would normally, then you say you want to have a meeting and you want these particular people in it, and the system, and also with this particular conference room or something.
Right.
Or you just say you don't know, you just need a conference room this big.
They're called resources, I think, in the
notebook?
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Right. So you specify what you want, and the system will look through everyone's calendars and find the time that seems to be available for everybody.
Cool.
And then automatically schedule the meeting and so automatically send out notices and all that.
Yeah.
Okay. But Exchange Server is very expensive, very complicated. The average person wouldn't have it.
Okay.
So there's this website that does the same thing for free called timebridge.com. TimeBridge.
Free.
So it's an online calendar. But you don't have to keep your calendar in it because it can import from Google Calendar. It can actually import from Outlook's calendar if you're dealing with people not on an Exchange server.
Okay.
Stuff like that. And again, the group of people you want to coordinate with all have to use TimeBridge.
Okay.
But as long as they do, you give TimeBridge the criteria for the meeting and it'll suggest the time for it when everyone's available.
Okay.
But it's just like Exchange Server, yeah.
But it does hook into Outlook like an Exchange server?
It can. If only for people who use Outlook. So if you use Outlook but other people don't, you don't have to keep your TimeBridge calendar up to date manually. It'll automatically look in your Outlook calendar, but other people could use Google Calendar, or other people could just...
So it just acts as like an interpreter that handles all the different calendars
getting into one common one, and then can schedule meetings, figure out the times when everyone's available.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool, because I can imagine like some company that doesn't want to have to pay the money for an Exchange server or maintain it could use this, but yet everybody could be using Outlook.
Right.
Okay, that's very
cool. Yeah.
Awesome.
And I forget what else. It's not only Outlook. It does Outlook and Google Calendar. I think it does others. You can import from other ones.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, I got one. So, back when I was teaching class, one of the things that my kids loved to do is there was a gas station right next to the school where I taught. And when we were performing and everybody was kind of getting dull and falling asleep, or they were just tired from a hard day's work at school.
Go over and breathe some fumes or something?
No. They could, but they would run across the street or run across the street and grab a bunch of energy drinks.
Okay.
bring them all back to the studio, and everybody would drink and get all hyper and excited.
Energy drink means it just has caffeine and a fancy name. Right?
A lot of sugar.
A lot of caffeine.
And a lot of caffeine.
And a fancy name.
And an incredibly sweet taste and a fancy name, absolutely. Very, very faddish. But yet, some of them were really, really good. But all of them had those two major things, which was a lot of caffeine and a lot of sugar. Horrible for you, I think, but right. In any case, so that's become really popular now. This was back in 2000.
I know. Half the soda shelves in Safeway are that stuff.
Various different designs on the cans and stuff. Yeah. So everybody's drinking them, including people I work with. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're horrible for you. I stay away from them, although every once in a while I'll have one of the Monster low-carb energy drinks. So anyway, so I found an article about an anti-energy drink.
Okay.
I'm going to put a link in the show notes to it. It says the drink is a new anti-energy drink designed to slow you down. The grape-flavored drink is fortified with melatonin, valerian root, and rose hips. I don't know which one slows you down.
Probably none of them. It's probably all bullshit.
Okay. Based on the color and the name of the beverage, I'd venture to say that they're playing off of the popular underground libation Purple Drank. This Village voice quotes the following from a press release. From design to production, every aspect of this calming drink was inspired by today's popular hip-hop artists who embrace the much sought-after hip-hop lifestyle that encourages people to capture a stress-free state of mind. So we'll figure out what that's all about. It might be bullshit.
Probably.
No idea.
Probably. Yeah. Well, who would want it anyway? Just help you go to sleep or something? Or
well, after you have your energy drink and you're freaking out and you're quaking and shivering in your car.
That's even worse. You sit there drinking opposite things like that. It would make the health even worse, I'm sure.
Yeah, either way, it's all bad. Yeah. I'm sure it's all bad.
Yeah.
So, any other...
This is what is very important nowadays. P-Psych's been around. There's been websites around for years to help you compare gas prices in different gas stations.
Yes, big.
And they've actually been out for years, but I'm surprised no one's ever heard of them. Uh-huh. Most people don't know they exist. And there's this like these two competing technologies of different types of websites where you give it your zip code. And it'll show you the prices of all the gas stations near you, actually live, up to date, you know, pretty much to the last few hours or something.
Okay.
And you can ask it what's the cheapest one near me, and they can look that up and all that.
All right.
One of them is one called GasBuddy.com, GasBuddy.com. And GasBuddy, as far as I know, works strictly by user input. They have enough people watching it that when you buy gas or if you drive by a gas station, they want you to enter the price that you saw.
Okay.
And apparently enough people do this that they actually are fairly up to date.
Because that could be flawed. If the people are not actually out there constantly updating this thing, then you're not going to get the most.
But supposedly in big cities, it is pretty accurate. Enough people do it.
Okay.
Okay. Then the other style, I've seen it. I've seen this URL here. I've also seen it like the Auto Club. I seen the AAA used to have a way of getting at it.
Okay.
I don't know who really does it or what a simple URL is to get to it. So every time I've ever seen this, it's been complicated URLs and kind of hidden away and stuff.
Okay.
But this other one method claims to do it by the gas distributors, that the distributors who actually deliver gas to all the stations enter into a database what their customers are charging, what the customer gas stations are charging.
Okay, I don't know if I've
And that one's supposed to be good too.
Okay.
But
that's definitely not what the end gas station wants the user to see, right? I mean,
right. Well, no. If they're high, they don't.
Yeah,
low,
absolutely.
They do. But yeah. So anyway, I'll post on the website because it's too complicated, and maybe I'll do a little bit of research trying to find a simpler one. But this one someone gave me is just as complicated as that old one I used to know from the Auto Club.
Okay.
Where you have to go through different levels of menus or something. So I'll post the other, besides GasBuddy, the other method that's supposed to be done by the distributors.
Okay.
So that people can play around with both of them.
And I know that people who have GPS units like that are fairly modifiable, like the TomTom line of the GPSs, they're now introducing that same service for your GPS.
Do you know where they get the data?
Of course, you have to hook it up. No, I don't know where they get the data, and you have to hook it up to your USB.
Right.
Yeah, you hook it up to the
computer. So it's not live. You just have to bring the GPS.
In my case.
So if you leave your GPS in the car.
For a couple of days, you don't hook it up to the GPS.
What a pain.
What's also a pain is that there's other things that it provides such as the positioning of the satellites that get downloaded as a USB, as an application through USB. And of course, you don't need to have that, but it just takes it longer to figure out where you are because it doesn't know where the satellites are.
Yeah, so it has to find usually they find it unless you put an airplane and fly thousands of miles away, they can usually figure it out fast enough.
Yeah, it's okay.
Have you talked about this theory of GPS? Because I read a book once on GPS. I still kind of remember a lot of it.
No.
GPS is very complicated.
Okay.
The way it works internally, and the reason it takes such long time delays, the GPS satellites are just in very intricate orbits. They're not geosynchronous. Yeah, they're not that.
Okay.
So the partly because geosynchronous wouldn't give you enough information, you need satellites in multiple positions in the sky in order to triangulate off of them and see where you are.
Okay.
So the GPS satellites, they are much lower orbits, and everyone's in a complicated orbit in the sense that where it's going to pass over different parts of the Earth is kind of complicated to calculate.
Okay.
So the GPS has to do two interesting things. One is that once it figures out where every satellite is in the sky, if you have any GPS units, you can usually bring up a display where it shows you where the satellites are and it shows a little diagram and stuff.
Okay.
So once it knows all that, then it has to triangulate based on information from the satellites, so how far away each satellite is from it.
Okay.
So it's actually a very tricky stat because the satellites are hundreds of miles up, and yet it can triangulate from the distances of them accurately enough to maybe 10 feet or something on the ground, including altitude.
Okay.
So that's part of the trickiness, is how they do all that triangulation once they know where they are. But then the other tricky part is, how does your little box know where the satellites are? There's too many satellites in much too intricate orbits for it to calculate it.
Okay.
So the satellites actually transmit data about where they are. Uh-huh. Satellites are always transmitting data about their current orbit, about exactly where they are right now.
Okay.
And then your unit has enough math in it to be able to figure out what to do with that information.
Okay.
Then the third issue is that the GPS data is all encrypted.
Okay.
It's encrypted in a spread spectrum type of thing.
So it's encrypted,
but in a spread spectrum kind of thing, where you don't even see the signal there. It's just kind of, the signal is hidden away as little pulses in the background, hisses and stuff. You don't even see a direct signal there.
Okay.
So the two effects about the complicated orbits and also the encryption is what causes the long time delays.
Okay.
Because if you turn the unit off for a few minutes, turn it back on again, it has enough information in its memory about where the satellites were. It can do a quick calculation of where the satellites would have moved in those several minutes and know instantly what to do.
Okay.
But if you turn it off for a few days and then back on again, its viewpoint of the satellites would get off too much. So it'll start over again and find the satellites again, download the data again, rather than trusting what it saw several days ago.
Okay.
So you have some amount of time delay because of that.
Right.
Before it'll start again. Okay. Then, because of the encryption, the encryption is kind of the cyclical thing where the pattern of the little random, almost seemingly random little blips of radio waves that seem to merge into the background static. That goes in certain patterns. So the GPS unit has to watch for a while to look at the patterns of the static and try to get itself synchronized with the pattern coming from the satellites.
So as long
as it sees the same satellite within a few hours or something, it can synchronize with its encryption pretty quickly.
Okay.
But if it hasn't seen it for a while, then it can have to spend a lot of time just resynchronizing with the encryption.
Wow.
And then download the data from the satellite about exactly what the orbit of the satellite is.
Wow.
And then start triangulating.
Crazy.
So anyway, that's what causes those time delays. And the worst part of all is if you suddenly move it somewhere else. Like you pick up your GPS and carry it on an airplane 5,000 miles away, and then wait a few days. See, the other thing, it doesn't even know what time it is. It gets its time from the satellite.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to break the encryption of the satellite first in order to start picking up the time of the day for the satellite, which is critical to all of the questions. So anyway, so that's why I say, if you suddenly move it thousands of miles away, and wait a while, we're just, it just gets totally loses track of everything.
Yes.
Then it has to just start watching for any satellite. Can I, do I see a satellite? Do I see one? Finally locks in on one satellite, starts downloading its data.
Yes.
Then it'll lock in another one, encryption-wise, start downloading its data. Finally figure out what time it is. Finally start calculating.
Nice.
That's why it can take, I think the new ones are much faster, but the older ones might take 15 minutes or half an hour to synchronize when they're a brand new place like that.
The one that I had for the iPac, the HP Pocket PC that I had, was like that all the time. It actually I don't know if it even kept the positions of the GPSs. I think it did.
If you turn it off for a few minutes, you'll find it does.
But it did spend sometimes an awful long time trying to figure out where the positions of the satellites were.
Right.
And the way that HP worked was that it communicated with the through Bluetooth.
Yeah, so you could watch
the brick.
You could watch what the...
And the brick was actually had a rechargeable battery in it, but that was the GPS.
Yes.
So I don't think it kept track of much information.
But I assure you, if you just turn it off and back on again quickly, you'll find that it would keep everything pretty well.
Okay.
But if you move it thousands of miles and destroy its accuracy at the time by waiting too long, it would start taking a long time. And, but they very early on, oh, that's such a cute little animal. He should videotape
it. You've got a wasp on my fridge.
Yeah, it's so cute. Anyway, so even in the old days, even the earlier ones, when you first turned it on, when it was totally confused, you could give it a hint. You could set the date and time, and you could, the more accurate you did it, the better. And you could give it, it won't bite us. It won't do anything. But
it wants to move.
Well, let it have it. But anyway, even the earlier ones, if you could tell it the date and time pretty accurately, and you would tell it where you are, at least vaguely where you are in the world, it would help them tremendously to lock in faster.
Hmm.
And I'm not sure. Lately, they seem to figure it out pretty well without even that many hints. So when you're saying you plug in USB, I bet all USB is doing is giving it a pretty accurate location and a pretty accurate time, time of day. And that's, so it's helping it the same way you used to do it on the device itself.
Well, it's actually downloading a file from the TomTom website that contains information about where the GPSs are located.
Yeah, where the satellites are right now.
So
instead of having it have to download that file after the satellite, I can imagine that would help it,
I'm going to throw out the garbage.
Okay. The contest from last week, if you listen to the last week's show, which I'm sure you all have, we announced the contest. No one's answered so far, so we're going to let it go another week. If no one answers by next week, I'll give the answer. It's about VHS. Should I summarize it? Nah, just listen to the last show. You'll hear what it is.
Yeah.
But the prize is really good. If you're interested in old phone stuff or anything, you'll like the prize.
Yeah, total nerd stuff, but it's really cool. It's old technology.
Oh, do we have time? Because I was going to give another item at another contest.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, do it.
Do it, dude! There's a website, slydial.com, SLYDIAL.com.
Okay.
That, if you go to that, it'll just tell you it's in beta test right now, and you have to sign up for a code, and it won't tell you anything.
Okay.
Well, in fact, once you do get the code for it, the website has nothing to do with anything. It's one of those things that's really a telephone-based service.
Okay.
And the only thing the website would do is tell you what phone number to dial, basically, and how to use it.
Okay.
So I'm going to reveal that secret here, because SlyDial has been public in some way from forums. So the phone number is 1-267-759-3425.
Okay.
So it's not a toll-free number. It is toll, but who cares? Nobody cares about long-distance charges.
If you have a Metro PCS phone, you're fine.
Well, any phone, the long-distance or local, doesn't really mean that much nowadays.
True.
Unless someone is really suckered into getting some stupid long-distance service, which a lot of people are.
Okay.
But if you have any reasonable long-distance service, you shouldn't care. Anyway, so it's 1-267-759-3425.
Five.
And then it'll ask you for a phone number to call, and then it plays an ad. It kind of forces you to listen to this little ad.
Okay.
And then it'll make a call for you to the number you gave, but what you're supposed to do is give it a cell phone number, and the point is it'll go directly to voicemail. It'll call that cell phone number in some, they think, secret, but I figure it out, in some way that causes the call to go immediately to the person's voicemail.
Okay.
So if you want to leave someone a message without talking to them, you go through the SlyDial thing like that, and it will do this.
Okay.
Okay. And they say that they try to avoid the person's phone ringing, but in reality, you'll see in reality the phone will always ring, like, very quickly. It'll be as though you called someone and hung up right away.
Okay.
Their phone will begin to ring slightly, and they will get an indication in their call history that you called.
Okay.
With your accurate caller ID.
Okay.
However, they won't be able to answer it, because they'll find a voicemail message from you. And they claim it's for cell phones only, but you can use it with home phones, and with so usually they will not work with voice over IP. If it's a phone number that's through a known voice over IP carrier, like Vonage or one of the millions of other ones, they'll recognize that and refuse to put it through. But it doesn't seem smart enough to recognize a home phone number, so it will take those.
Okay.
So the effect on a home phone number, you really have to play with that. I guess part of the contest is play with Slidell with home phone numbers, play with Slidell with home phone numbers that have a voicemail that are attached to the phone company's voicemail system.
Okay.
Just like your cell phone would typically be.
Okay.
And try ones that have your own answering machine instead of a company one. Play around with it and try it out in a bunch of different situations, and you'll find it's really interesting. If you know a lot about phones, you'll be very puzzled about how this could possibly work.
Okay.
Even the cell phone thing is puzzling, because when you first read about it, you think that it works by just knowing backdoor secret phone numbers into all the voicemail systems.
Okay.
You think that's the way it works, but it really doesn't, because if all we're doing is calling backdoor voicemail phone numbers, it would not cause your phone to ring briefly.
Right. Okay.
You know,
okay.
And it would not cause a, because I'll tell you the answer. If you have a home phone that goes to the phone company's message center, that way it will work with that.
Okay.
It'll cause the call to go to the message center instead of ringing the phone.
Oh, and so it would not actually ring the phone at all?
Or it'll ring it just like a cell phone.
Either way, you
it'll ring
answer.
It very briefly.
Okay.
You can't answer it.
Okay.
So anyway, so I was just amazed by how this could possibly work. Was that the Hornet? Yeah.
Yes, that was the Hornet.
Anyway, so I was just amazed by how they could do that. I had all kinds of ideas about special SS7 signals they must be sending out or something. But then it dawned on me, it's actually quite simple. So I'll do another contest to anyone who could figure out how Slidell works internally. But I say you do have to do a bunch of experiments with different types of numbers before you'll have the information to do it.
We can go this way.
And I'll give out a Captain Crunch whistle. I'll give out your choice of colors, because I have every color of Captain Crunch whistle eventually, except one. I saw one once that was in a color I don't have, but I was quite annoyed. Okay. But anyway, I have pretty much every color that they normally come in. So I'll give out a Captain Crunch whistle with your choice of colors.
Okay, I gotta put a link to
if you could figure out how Slidell works. And so leave your answer either in an email to me or to Wes, or put it in a comment. Better yet, I'll go to our website for the blog and leave a comment. And then if you're the first person to get this, then I'll give you that prize.
Cool. That is an incredible prize too. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So we'll have to I'll have to put links into the whole history behind the Captain Crunch whistle.
What the hell is the Captain Crunch whistle anyway? But yeah, we could do that. Yeah, we could do that.
There's no such thing. It was never a Captain Crunch whistle.
Yes, it was.
I know. Yeah. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
It really was, but that's not what
I even have pictures of the cereal box they came in with the advert with the wording on the box saying Captain Crunch whistle inside. I can even give you that to post.
Anyway, I think that's it for us. We've gone over.
Okay. We always go over.
Yes, we always do. Yeah. I should just have the length of the show be whatever we feel like it should be.
I know.
Anyway. Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay.